The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What are we doing?
We are doing iTunes reviews.
Giving away some free shit.
Free t-shirts and tanks.
Tank tops.
How
many other podcasts do you guys listen to that give away
stringers?
Give away shirts every single week.
Yeah. How many podcasts do you listen to that bribes people to leaving reviews? None.
Hey, it works.
We're bribing people to like us.
And we deliver. We deliver.
It's kind of like a fraternity when you think about it, or a sorority.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interestingly, some people have
Show us your tits.
Show us your tits and you'll get a free t-shirt.
Instead, code, write us a review.
Send a DM to Doug.
Either one will get you a free t-shirt. Yeah,
either way.
Just saying.
We're putting it out there.
All right, let's give some shit away.
Yeah, interestingly, some people haven't claimed their shirt yet.
So
if you happen to be going through a past episode and your name comes up, we'll honor that. We'll honor that.
That is if Adam doesn't take your shirt home and wear it himself first.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know you already wore them all.
You got to first show that you aren't owning shirts.
Yeah.
You really need it.
Yeah.
Like you don't have one.
All right, give us our first winner, Doug.
Well, let me just say our reviews have slightly increased, so we're on a good trajectory here.
Thank you.
So I want everybody out there to review hard this coming week. And I tell you what, if we get 12 reviews, I'll give out 4 shirts total.
Don't forget, too, there is nothing unethical about you grabbing somebody else's phone and leaving a review. Not at all, whatsoever.
Not at all. And then make
absolutely
sure you put
not.
Your, yeah, and then you in claim fact, it afterwards for
yep.
yourself.
Yep.
You're benefiting humanity by doing that.
That's right.
Absolutely. The world's a better place because of that. So we got 2 winners this week. We have Meathead Mermaid.
Woo woo.
Oh, she's the redhead girl that comments on your stuff.
Yeah, oh, nice. Yes. And E. Pedro, who wrote a very emotional review.
His review.
That was very deep.
I recommend everybody who's listening to this podcast to go and read our reviews and find the one by E. Pedro. It's a long review and it's very, it was deep. It was
I kind of took me back.
In fact, read all of our reviews because there's just some incredibly amazing ones.
Oh, hilarious ones too.
Yeah, hilarious, amazing. I mean, I get inspired just reading
honestly. I have a guilty confession.
You guys are killing it.
One of my things to do because we do get quite a few now is like once a week I get on there and it's normally like a Thursday or Friday
night.
Is
it when you're pooping?
No, I get high
and
I do this.
It's when I'm pooping.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I smoke a little bit of weed and then I sit and I read through it and I get all emotional, dude. Katrina walked in the other day and I was crying. Yeah,
you were really crying?
I was, and it might have been his that I started crying.
You might be smoking too much, right? No. The kind where you're like, your nipples start leaking.
I do get a little.
For real, you cry?
I'm sensitive, dude.
You're like a big bitch. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, he's such a bully.
You know, I'm
just kidding.
I sometimes
cry all the time.
I don't really, but I do get when people speak from their heart and things like that. Okay, like when you're a man or a woman, and you're complimenting another human being, especially if I feel like a man to a man, complimenting them. It takes a lot of humility. It takes a very strong person to do that. And I feel like the way I reciprocate that is like that's special to me, and I get all emotional over it because I feel like not a lot of people do that.
Yeah, not even people could put themselves out there and let that be known.
Exactly.
It's quite a process.
It is quite the process that, it's the reason why we don't have a million of them. We'd have a million of them if everybody did it, but it takes
some. If we had a million of them, you'd be a fucking mess. Yeah. We don't want to do that.
I mean, his mascara be everywhere.
Guys.
Did you read yesterday's review?
Okay.
Last winner.
No, there's 2 winners.
Oh.
Meathead Mermaid, E. Pedro, send us your iTunes name, your address, your size to mindpumpradio@gmail.com.
Thank you. Make Adam cry.
Love it.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Why do you look so oily?
It's true, huh? Why am I so oily? You know what I think
it
is?
What does that mean?
No, you know what's going on?
Or shiny. I guess that'd be a nice word.
I'm oily for 2 reasons.
He is shiny.
Number 1, because I'm Sicilian, but that's racist. Number 2.
You said it.
Number 2, It's my testosterone levels are high right now, and when that happens, my skin gets a little oily.
Why are your testosterone levels so high?
Are you saying that you are
you run into gear? You run into gear, yo?
No. I've reduced my my masturbatory activities.
Oh. Masturbatory? Is that a word? Is masturbatory a word?
Masturbatory activities.
Doug, Google that.
It is trying to don't Google masturbatory activities.
Yes, Google.
That part was a joke. Okay. No, here's for reals. Because
it was a joke, or is it?
Because you're occluding your forearms.
Because I want to use that word.
What
is that word?
No, masturbatory activities is probably a word.
Probably, I love this.
Probably a word.
I think it is a word,
Doug. Of course you do, Dad. Of course you do.
Hey, Sal.
Of course you
Sal.
Do.
Is that guys, steak small enough for you?
Yeah. I think he's right.
I love it when this is Doug. This is Doug's contribution. Contribution. Sal's right.
Yeah, right.
Guys, I've been down this road.
Right.
You know what, motherfuckers?
I don't doubt him anymore.
Adam and Sal are debating. Right.
This is the first. This Sal's is the right, fourth guys. Time, maybe. Maybe the fourth time that you have said a word that I made up, and I've been right every time.
It's the third.
Here's the thing: I'm okay with being wrong. I'm okay with it. I feel the need.
Thesaurusing right now.
Somebody
yes.
It's both you guys.
It's a real word.
Let me see. The reason why I do this, and I feel like I've seen this on a couple posts, like. Some people like want us to like, oh my God, could you, every time Sal talks about something, could you guys please post the studies? It's not, it's like, no, bro, we don't have the fucking time to do that every time. And half the stuff he says, it's like he remembered a study that he read fucking 9 years ago. So,
page 9, column C.
I feel the need that every once in a while I gotta keep you on your toes by calling you out on some shit just to make sure, because I know somebody else was listening and thought, like, did he just make that word up?
No, but, I didn't.
Let's see here.
The only time I kind of doubted was the whole smart
thanks
kid
for being
the,
a part of my daily
big,
masturbatory activities.
No. I'm just saying, I Googled it. It's a word. There you go. See?
That's all you... Oh, give me a fucking thesaurus dictionary. You don't have a dictionary on your phone?
I don't know if it's going to be in a dictionary.
Why wouldn't it be in the dictionary if it's...
Well, Matt, that's two words.
Just because you can Google something doesn't make it correct. What kind of back...
Wikipedia.
Nice try, buddy.
Right.
That might have worked on Doug, but that won't work on me.
All right, let's try this then. Let's just look up masturbatory. Because we know activities...
not Webster. It ain't existing.
Wait a minute. Masturbatory is a word.
Give it
Merriam-Webster dictionary.
Merriam-Webster.
Trying to help these people out here.
It's got to be legit.
There's such a thing as a Wiktionary.
Let's
now?
Play the game. How I'm many sure. times can Sal be right
or
and Adam be wrong?
Excessively self-absorbed or self-indulgent. Masturbatory insanity. Derived terms pertaining to masturbation. Okay. Yeah. Okay, you're right, dude. It's an adjective. In case anybody ever
thank
asks
you.
Again.
You're my fucking phone now. Don't look through the pictures. Well. I don't want you to see my masturbatory activities.
Because I logged them.
So you know what?
I have
so,
a log of my masturbatory activities.
I want to address something because we've had people ask.
You want to undress something?
Address.
So
oh, dress.
You're saying you're shooting a lot of volume now.
No. I was joking about that. I was joking. People get angry. Some people in my family get mad when I talk about masturbation. So I'm going to stop doing it. That was my last masturbation joke.
That's a lie.
Well, I'll keep it going okay. Just in your honor.
Thank you. Yeah. I want to address something because people have been saying, I want to see some of the links to studies that Sal is, Sal refers to.
Do your own homework.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. I want to be very clear. I've said this already probably 10 million times. I actually have very little formal education. I have no formal education. All this information that I gather is because I have an insatiable thirst for particular types of knowledge. Because I don't want to use the broad term knowledge because there's a lot of shit I know nothing about because I could care less. But there's certain topics I get into and I become obsessed about and I become manic about it. And then I
obviously
also
masturbation one of those
is one of those things. And so that's the
hence the masturbatory. Wait, what was it called? Masturbatory activities. I'm using that next week.
Yeah.
Hey, check this out.
That's when you fuck yourself.
It's legit.
You're like, damn it, I fell. What happened? I didn't tie my shoe. I had a masturbatory activity.
One of our most viral episodes recently, Bacteria Sexy.
Yeah.
I've gotten so much feedback on that. And I have to say, when you brought that up, I remember me and Justin kind of laughed at you. We were like, oh, really?
You guys always laugh at me,
though. I don't know that we laughed at him.
Well, we kind of
like... You guys are bullies. I mean, let's be honest.
You know, that's what it makes it sound like.
The two jocks in the room always making fun of
me. No, I was like, oh, yeah. I think we just joked about it because
we did.
Like,
we joked.
We talk a lot about bacteria on this show.
And we said, okay, right?
It's not very common.
And then you know what? You were, and I admittedly said, hey, you were right. That was a great topic. We obviously helped a lot of people because we got a lot of great feedback. So my roommate, Ev, Super, super.
Oh, I know Ev.
Yeah.
Cool guy.
So after he's like, he shared that episode with so many people. He's like, oh my God, that episode was so cool. That was so good. He's like, dude, you have to check out the, do you notice what I've been doing every night? And I'm like, no. And he's like, when I'm gargling. And I'm like, oh, I said, yeah, no, I have, what is up with? So he walks around right now in my house for like fucking 30 minutes with a mouthful of like
coconut oil.
So he's walking around.
Right? Am I right?
Yeah, okay. You're right. And he
looks like jizz, but it's
and
not.
And he's switching.
I was gonna say,
hey guys.
And you know, I'll be downstairs. He's walking around the kitchen doing stuff, and I'll try and talk, have conversation. When he looks over at me, I'm like, bro, spit out the mouthwash, bro. And he's like doing all this stuff, and I'm like, whatever, right?
Oil pulling.
Yeah, he's doing oil pulling. Uh-huh. And he's like, man, and then he felt the need to explain all of it to me after the whole bacteria thing. I thought it was very fascinating.
So there's truth to it. There's some truth to it. Coconut oil contains high amounts of lauric acid, which is antibacterial, antifungal. So swishing that around your mouth will kill bacteria. It also, because it's a fat and because it's an oil, it dissolves solids and other things in your mouth and on your teeth. So doing it for 30 minutes, because you got to do it for like a long time, like 10, 20, 30 minutes. So it's kind of sucks. Your mouth gets tired.
Yeah. I thought that was crazy how long he does that for.
Yeah.
It also, it real similar to the whole concept of, you know, how toothpaste and that kills everything, all the everything in your mouth, even the good bacteria. And that's what he was talking about, was the coconut oil doesn't do that. It'll actually still protect it and put a layer to protect over the teeth and the gums, but then actually flush out all the bad bacteria.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's good for your mouth. Dentists will even agree, even Western dentists. Toothpaste, by the way, is mostly bullshit. I don't know if people know that. It's mostly nothing. It's flavored nothing. Doesn't really do much. Yeah. Baking soda is probably your best option.
Sugar.
Yeah, baking soda is your best option.
Well, doesn't all toothpaste have a little bit of baking soda in it, though?
Not all of it.
Oh, no. Really?
Only the ones that say baking soda.
Oh, I thought most did. I
just assumed. You could get your toothbrush, wet it, and just dip it in, like, if you have a little saucer of baking soda, and brush your teeth, and you'll get better results than if you used toothpaste.
Well, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I'm switching to chalky ass fucking
drinking some baking
coconut
soda.
Oil.
So that was the first thing he said.
You also don't need toilet paper to wipe your ass. You just use your hand. Just kidding. I'm sorry.
Cross the line.
Yeah, that was too far there, bro. You know how I feel.
I mean, you could.
You know how. How I feel about
that. How dare
that.
You do that to Adam and all his cleanly habits.
You know, I made a joke.
I spent a lot of money on that.
I made it. It was a joke, obviously, like, but I was on a very sensitive topic.
It's like cheating on a guy's whole act.
Never joke about ass cleanliness to Adam, because he takes that shit serious.
I do take that shit seriously.
Fuck.
So he's switching around. He's walking around. He's got his new Beats headphones on, my roommate, Ev. And he finally...
Is he like Yoda?
Yeah. He
said that at the end.
He finally spits. You like that? Yeah. It's because I've been watching a lot of Star Wars lately. He spits out the coconut oil, and then I say, hey, bro, you got the Beats finally. How do you like them? Oh, man, I love them. Dude, check this out. He's like, I got them through T-Mobile, and they just gave them to me. And I'm like, what do you mean they just gave them to me? He goes, oh, well, T-Mobile has this deal with Beats. You guys know what it is?
No.
And I don't know about you guys, but anytime businesses do very smart moves like this, I'm always fascinated by
this.
I think this was a very fascinating partnership they made. So Beats partners up with T-Mobile. Now you can go get yourself a badass pair of $400 Beats, and it just is $15 a month on your cell phone bill. You get them right there.
That's fucking brilliant.
Right?
Yep.
You know what?
The best part about it is I mathematically calculated it out. He ends up only spending like $30 more or something like that over a year and a half of payments for these headphones. So for $15 more on your, not even, I think it was like $11 and some change.
That was brilliant on Dr. Dre's part.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That is.
Oh, wait, no, he sold it. Huh?
Yeah, it's Apple now.
Apple,
yeah.
Fuckers.
Smart, right?
You know what? Well, God, everything should be in payments.
They need to start using Beats, yeah.
Everything should be a payments. Think about it.
Well, that's
almost everything.
That's what they're trying to do.
That's are trying to do.
Yeah, the
EFT
even,
on your Netflix.
Even the
TV.
Car wash place is like the here. You could just come in. It's like $24 a month, right? And you could just as many times as you want.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Where?
At the car wash there off of Bascom.
Classic?
Yeah, in Hamilton. Yeah.
Fuck Classic off. Does that?
Yeah.
I'm going.
That's where I go.
Do you know how many times a year I wash my car?
But see, this is what they make. Like this whole last month, I didn't go because it's all raining.
Yeah.
Right. But they still got it.
So yeah, still that's still a good deal.
You got massage places. You got massage places that do that too.
Yeah, but it's smart. It's you know, it's it's long-term thinking. Like, they're going to get a lot more return from
that. The Beats headphones thing to me was like, wow, that's a no-brainer. Because one, I don't know about you guys. I don't even look at my cell phone bill. My cell phone's automated. Like, yeah. I just get a notice that it gets deducted. Like, and then let's be honest, it always fluctuates anywhere between $5 to $20 based off of what I freaking did, you know, as far as
what you downloaded or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So I never really paid. So the difference of $15 on my cell phone bill would never even make me even look twice. So to have that, and then now you have this cool pair of, you know, $400 headphones that. He literally, I think he only pays $30 or $40 more dollars over the length of a year and a half of making payments. And I'm like, dude, that is so smart.
That's a great idea,
right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Brilliant, huh?
It is.
I thought you guys would appreciate that. I know you guys appreciate good smart business stuff.
Smart move.
Hey, whoa, 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 whoa,
whoa. Yeah. It's time for the Q&A.
Motherfucking quad time,
everybody.
Quad time.
We went crazy.
Yeah.
First up is Hair by Claire HBC.
Hair by Claire don't care. Booyah.
She's asking about the best gangster meal systems and plans.
Oh, this is one of my homegirls that goes to OTF. What up?
Yeah.
Told her for sure I would get to her. I'm glad she did that right away. I just literally told her the other day, make sure you do something on Qua. We'll hook you up and answer. So here you go. Best meals, systems, plans. I know it was a little bit longer than that. I think, you know, getting started on a plan. I know she mentioned
not talking like Nutrisystem or something.
Well, it sounds like it doesn't matter. Any sort of plan that she starts to follow, she has this hard time with sticking to it for a long period. It gets boring about that. And then you go and you binge, which I think is actually a really good question and a really good point to talk to people coming into January right now, because this goes back to what we talked about before.
Aggressively super restrictive.
Exactly.
About it.
Yeah. You just came off of freaking New Year's, Christmas, and Thanksgiving, where you were eating all kinds of shit. And then to go from that and transition to, you know, some, you know, crazy Nutra system, whatever program that limits you to 1300 to 1500 calories tops. And it's, you know, liquid drinks you're drinking or salads you're eating all day long. I mean, yeah, it's that you are going to end up binging, you know. You're gonna be so hungry all the time, and eventually you give in, and then when you do, you shoot those leptin levels up, and you can't control it, and you get going like crazy. So, balance.
Yeah, balance is important. And to be fair, I will say this too, though. Okay, to be fair, all things being equal, you got a good program, you're at a deficit, everything's balanced, you're gonna get hungry still. Okay, so that needs to be said, because I think people have this. They have this misconstrued notion that they shouldn't be hungry.
Yeah, like you should. It's almost like pain. Like when they say stay on top of the pain, I feel like people have that same sense. Like I gotta feed before I get the hunger monster will attack.
Right. And they can't deal with it. Like I'll give you an example. Like right now I'm hanging out a lot with my brother, so I'm making him like shakes and I'm trying to help him with his diet. Well, he fucking snaps like 4 days later, 5 days later. Like, oh, I'm just gonna have it's just one cookie or whatever. And I get it. I get that whole thing. But it's just he doesn't have a good relationship with feeling a little hungry sometimes. It's not to him. It's like this horrible thing. I shouldn't feel. If you're at a deficit and you're burning body fat and everything's balanced, you're burning body fat.
There's cool stuff going on.
You're going to be hungry sometimes, and you got to be okay. You just got to deal with it. Like this means I'm burning body fat and I got to deal with it.
Well, that's how this is how I motivate my clients. I tell them that. You know, the motivating part about that feeling, think about this. That's your body's natural system or your body's natural response telling you that we're switching systems. Mm-hmm. We are now going away from using glucose as our primary source of fuel right now. And we're now switching over to using fat because we're completely depleted. And that's that feeling. The body lets you know that that's probably what's going on. And when you think of it like that, guess what? You could be hungry driving your car or sitting still and your body's burning fat. How awesome is that?
Right.
So switch your mentality of thinking that, you know, wow, you know, yeah, I'm hungry and stuff, but if I can just actually fight that off and not give in to that, I don't even have to exercise right now. And I could actually sit here and actually eat up.
And
eat
how
up
many
fat.
Times is that hunger? Not real hunger.
It's, yeah, dude, really,
that's
yeah.
another one, man.
I know.
Like yeah, I go to the movie theater and I'm hungry for popcorn. I could have just eaten.
Well, they say like what? They say like 60% like is psychological. Or
yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
So you get in and you get the smells and you get, you know, it's all part of the experience. So a lot of times, I think rituals too, like family and friends, and like you just have a certain time of a day. And so then it just, your body sort of has this natural response that it builds because of these sensations and, you know, how you experience these things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she asked specifically, like, what's the best meal system? Here's the deal. There's general rules with diet. If you're trying to get leaner, you need to eat less than you're burning. You should have relative balance, although some people do better with more fat and less carbohydrates. You should eat whole foods. They should be pretty healthy and nutrient dense. That helps a lot. But there's a lot of individual variances too. So really, you need to start slow and start to figure your body out. So step one would be, you know, take one thing and make that your goal. Like, I'm not going to change my diet at all. All I'm going to do is eat one third less.
Or eliminate something. Let's see, because most people have something they can totally eliminate that is pretty much worth, like, soda pop.
Right.
You know, or ice cream at night, or boxed fucking cereal.
Just cut that out first.
Yeah. Get rid of something that you know is completely not helping out your goal whatsoever, and replace it. And you don't have to get rid of it and not eat anything. Get rid of it and replace it with something that's whole and natural and that has some nutritional benefit to it, you know, other than what ice cream or cereal or.
Well, and here's the other problem too. I was just thinking when you're talking about this, about these foods, like, this is where this reaction to that, I think, with the, if it fits your macros, like, I'm going to immediately start to identify these bad quote unquote foods, right? My pizzas and ice creams, and I'm going to make them the focus, and I'm going to build my nutrition plan around that.
Right.
Right. Instead of what we just said.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a big difference. It's like, you are, you know, telling yourself that, like, this is such a priority to me. And that I'm so horny for this food that I'm going to just do all this shit to make it work.
You know, this reminds me of somebody, and I know this is probably a listener, so this is going to sting a little bit. Somebody posted on Sal's thing a while back, and I think she's a regular listener. I definitely know she's a regular follower on our pages. And she always likes to challenge everything, which we all appreciate that. But she specifically likes to pick on the whole us talking about shit food. And her response was, you know, I just don't like it when, you know, we demonize food. And I believe Sal got back to her in a nice manner. I probably would have done it differently because she had done this several times and was saying that's the issue, is that, you know, these fitness professionals demonizing foods like that. Here's the bottom line. Like, there is shitty food. I'm sorry.
You can't sugarcoat it. I mean,
there's nothing wrong with making a valid attempt at not eating that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I'm not saying that you'll never eat pizza again. I'm not saying I'll never eat ice cream. All those things find their way back into my diet too every once in a while.
There's occasions and things, situations that you find yourself in. Yeah, of course. No big deal.
And it's okay to eat it sometimes and say to yourself, like, I just ate something that's not good for me.
Exactly.
Like, that's fine. You know it.
But you just said that and you admitted that.
Listen, Saturday night I went out and fucking drank like an idiot, right? Yeah. Was I thinking to myself, like, this fits my macros?
Right.
No, I'm like, this is not good for me, that's okay.
Yeah, this goes, I mean, it's such a right and wrong thing. What's right and wrong, really? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you start getting into these, like, these stupid debates, and you're just like, dude, look, there is one way to do things, you know, and there's kind of a standard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's what we're trying to establish, that people understand that.
Yeah. I think it's important too. I mean, here's a shameless plug for us. This is how we created the nutrition guide. You know, like anything else, what we've done is it's a guide. It's a guide to help you, you know, navigate through your own fitness journey and make healthy, good choices. It's not some cookie cutter diet that says you got to eat this, you got to eat that, follow this for the next, you know, three, and you end up binging it. No, it's showing.
Will your plan be somewhat squirrely sometimes? Who cares? But you know where the straight line is.
Yes, right? And that's what this is all about. Is about a guide from point A to point B. This is the ideal way for us to how to eat from these types of foods, how you choose these, how you grocery shop. All that's inside of our guide. So that was a whole purpose of why we did that, and why we all easily could have mathematically done this. And this is what, just so you guys know, every cookie cutter popular diet at the most expensive or the most sold books at Barnes and Nobles on diets, every single one of them go to one principle. They stick to the same principle, even though they give you a twist on its fat or protein or its carb or it's this fancy name to it. They all go down the same thing. They take your body weight. And they figure, okay, a female between 130 and 150 should eat X amount of calories.
Right.
And then they fit whatever their, like, gimmick, you know, spin is into that caloric intake. And they know that if you're that size and you're only eating that, you're gonna lose weight. And we easily could have put something just like together. It's not hard at all for us to mathematically sit down and draw up a male and female diets and separate it by 15 to 20 pounds and scale it up in calories and starve everybody's body. But that does not teach you how to eat properly.
No, if you have someone who really does it slowly, takes their time and figures their body out and sees what works for themselves, you'll have someone who's got long-term success.
Absolutely.
That's what you get at the end of that.
Absolutely.
So. Next qua.
Okay, next qua. Ex tamale jandrox.
Jandrox. The J is pronounced like an H.
That's correct.
So what is it? Ex tamale jandrox.
It's the tamale jandrox. I don't know either.
Let's go with that. All right. What can you do to avoid dementia or Alzheimer's?
I used to know this, but I forgot.
I was giving you a courtesy CBD? Laugh till it sunk in.
Some CBD.
Avoid sugar. They're now positively linking issues with processing sugar and the metabolic systems around that with dementia and Alzheimer's. In fact, some researchers, this is not mainstream, but some researchers refer to Alzheimer's as type 3 diabetes.
Wow.
So it's very, very close.
Really? That's new to me.
Yeah. So if you Google type 3 diabetes, you'll see some people calling Alzheimer's that. Matter of fact, I should. Yeah. Maybe Doug, you could do that just to double check, make sure I'm correct.
I was thinking while, we're talking about that, like with neuroplasticity and like ways to train the brain as far as new experiences and constantly challenging it in new ways. I mean, is that applicable to this? I mean, with Alzheimer's, like I see that that one program that they've made on the computer too, or they're just trying to get your brain to think and challenge it in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, staying active does keep and exercising keeps the body health, the brain healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, usually what keeps the body healthy keeps the brain healthy. Remember that. But there are specific things that make the brain operate better. Now, here's a big one.
Well, can you nerd this up for us?
Absolutely.
I know I'm going to ask you to dumb it down, but because we know what Alzheimer's is. I know Justin does too. I'm very familiar. But what exactly is happening inside the mind that is causing you to...
Yeah, and because the other thing I worry about is the genetic component to that because, it runs in my family, so this is...
Is this a signal that I'm starting to lose? Is it a part of my brain that I'm no longer connecting to? Is it some sort of relationship between my body and space and awareness? And what is the actual science? Do you know what's this?
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to look at... So I can't remember the name of the proteins that build up in the brain. But they build up in the brain. The brain can't get rid of them. It's a waste that builds up. And it's this progressive...
It's almost like a blockage then to blocking a signal.
Yeah. And so some people think it's a metabolic disorder of the brain where it can't get rid of... I can't remember the name of these proteins. Maybe Doug can look it up while we're talking here. Nonetheless...
That makes sense because that's why also things like ketogenic diets and stuff like that are supposed to be very positive.
Ketogenic diets. I was just going to say, ketogenic diets, now the research, a lot of research going into those and treating Alzheimer's and dementia, and they're having lots of success.
Oh, so there's a link between that diabetes that you mentioned.
Well, ketogenic diets, there's lots of science now supporting that it makes the mitochondria of cells operate better, and it's your body... from a metabolic standpoint, operates in a much cleaner way. Uh-huh. And they give even people with Alzheimer's, they'll have them, eat like coconut oil or MCT oil, which gets turned right into ketones. So they're not even on a ketogenic diet. They just give them something that they know will give them some ketones,
uh-huh,
and they've improved cognitive function. Crazy. So, that's one big thing right now that's out there. Doug, did you find something there?
Yeah. Amyloid beta.
Thank you. Amyloid beta proteins build up in the brain. So activity, ketogenic diet is one of them. Anything that reduces systemic inflammation. So if you have any food intolerances and gut issues, they're now finding that gut issues influence the brain directly, just like we talked about in an earlier episode. The lymphatic system now connects to the brain as well. Mm-hmm. So that'll benefit, is making sure you don't eat anything that you have intolerances to. So if you eat something, you get really bloated from it, or it just upsets your stomach, gives you a lot of gas, but you really like it, so you keep eating it anyway, you should probably stop. You should probably stop eating those things. Lastly, they're doing lots of research on cannabinoids, from marijuana, mm-hmm. and that preventing you know, the progression or development of Alzheimer's because of its neuroprotective effects. It's very anti-inflammatory for the brain.
Yeah, mm. I know it's also related to Parkinson's and stuff like that. I've seen studies on that because I've read a lot for the CBD related to that.
Conditions that degenerate the neurological system, cannabinoids seem to do really well with. Because of its protective property. So they don't know why cannabinoids seem to be effective for Alzheimer's. One of the theories is that cannabinoids, they help with programmed cell death. So if a cell is a little mutated or off, rather than sticking around, it kills itself. This is also why cannabinoids are anti-cancer.
The ironic part is whenever I smoke weed, I forget what I did earlier in the day.
Yeah.
That's the ironic part.
Well, high doses of cannabinoids, in particular THC, will reduce the size of the hippocampus. So it will influence and reduce your ability to have short-term memory function. However, cannabidiol, CBD, another cannabinoid found in marijuana, prevents a lot of that, which is why it's important if you're going to use cannabis on a regular basis to have something that has cannabidiol in it. An easy way to do it would be to take ibuprofen when you smoke or use marijuana, because ibuprofen, they've shown to reduce that effect. However, if it's on a regular daily basis, probably not a good idea
to take ibuprofen every single day.
Yeah, exactly.
The CBD and the THC, not so bad, but the ibuprofen every
on
day.
On a regular, every single day, probably not.
Back to Brandon asks about your thoughts on using body weight only training to stay lean and build muscle.
Interesting question.
Yeah, this is a good
one. Didn't you do that for a long time, Justin? For yourself?
I did do that actually, for a year. And for me, for a year. I was trying to get into, this is before CrossFit. It was like right before CrossFit got popular.
When you were trying to get into the circus?
Yeah, when I was trying to get
into the circus. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I was just really into like TRX suspension training. I was into Olympic rings. And I just, I wanted to take a break from weights because my entire sports career and basically all throughout my life, lifting weights has always been the same thing. Has always been heavy loaded back squats, heavy bench press, heavy. Well, I wasn't really big into deadlifting, but I definitely did a lot of power cleans and front squats and all that kind of stuff. But it was just all barbell driven. Like that's all I've done. And like always to as much load as I could put on it. So I was challenging myself in a sense to
do something different
and get my body to adapt, obviously. But I probably went an excessive amount because I was just interested to see what would happen. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
This self-experimentation.
What did you experience? What did you notice a year of doing that? The good, the bad? What's your takeaway?
I definitely lost size, but my muscle density, I felt really connected as far as my movements were concerned. I move a lot better. At a lower weight to begin with, but then at a strong lower weight, I felt like I was a better athlete as far as, having multiplanar movement and being really efficient in that. However, I did not feel powerful.
I was just going to ask you, if you could put it on a scale, like a percentage, I probably lost, 20% of my strength and power, if you were to relate it to your squat or your clean or something like that, and you, how much would you think you lost?
Yeah, I probably dropped about 20%. That's a good number. When I went back to doing backloaded squat and bench and all that kind of stuff, I definitely lost. I lost some, but what I gained was an insanely stronger core. And so I felt like I actually I took that stronger core, and then it benefited me in the longer term. But it took me a while to get back.
Now, here's the thing. Body weight training is resistance training. I mean, I want to make sure I say that because people think of it as a completely different, type of training. It's resistance training. Could you accomplish a lot of the things that, that Justin
did
with barbells and dumbbells and moving in different planes and stuff? Yes. If you're looking for overall athletic performance, you probably a good combination of the two would probably be best, right?
Exactly. And I think that was what I was experimenting with and what I was happy to find out, wow, this really complements. And then I started, working with them together once I came back to weights. So I think it really, more than anything, helped educate me how they both interact with each other and how to most benefit from using both.
Yeah, if you don't have no access to a gym and you want to do resistance training, then that's what you do. You do body weight training, and it's fine. Here's the thing, though. Body weight training is actually remarkably, it sounds like it's easy because you don't have equipment. It's remarkably difficult, especially if you're a beginner.
Oh, you can get creative ways to make it real difficult.
Yeah, because I could give someone 5-pound dumbbells, but there's only so much I can regress a push-up or a pull-up. I can't regress unless I have some kind of equipment, right? So we have to change the body weight movements. And so it's actually, it can be very challenging to do, especially if you have muscle imbalances.
Well, I want to break down a little bit what his specific question, which is, you know, thoughts on using body weight training to stay lean and build muscle.
Lean part first.
Well, here's the thing. My thoughts on that, answering that is this, is can it be done? Absolutely. Is it the most effective way to stay lean and build muscle? No. Mm-mm. No. If you put two clients and you got somebody who's just doing body weight exercise and that's all they're doing, and then I have another person where I'm allowed to use program designing with cardio, different levels, and training you a certain way, like I can lean out, shape, and sculpt that person more effectively than somebody who's only doing body weight exercises. Totally. Just like if, you know, somebody who only does anything, if you only do a certain modality, you restrict yourself to some point. Can you be, are there guys out there that look ripped and lean and do that shit? Yeah, absolutely.
There's a counter to that, though. I would say that you could, in a sense, build a more efficient moving body by doing body weight training. And only reason why I say that, we're not talking about muscle gain, because obviously you're going to get better gains lifting heavier load. That's just math. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really what you're doing, because you have to find really creative ways to make your body heavier, in a sense, by using gravity and angles and, really more challenging situations. I've lost my whole train of thought.
Well, I see where you're going with this. I still think, though, it goes back to, okay, you're training your body weight. You have to find all these creative ways. You have to have some incredible core stability to do that. You're moving in crazy different not just different planes, but the twisting and the moving and the amount of proprioception that's involved.
I think you have to use a lot more. Like you're a lot more muscles are firing in specific, like twisting, different types of angles, like different ways than you would just being in a linear sort of plane, right?
Well,
like whether I'm sagittal, I'm transverse. It's like, no, I'm doing a lot of different things and my body is all moving simultaneously. So it takes a different type of discipline that you're training your brain to respond towards, right? That brain and the muscle. So it might in a sense be more beneficial in terms of getting like a firing recruitment pattern. Maybe like that's a way to enhance that, you know, going back into lifting load.
We can't forget that all training is a skill also.
Right.
Okay. So
it's a different skill.
It's also learning a skill. And if you're good at body weight movements, then you're going to have a really good skill of moving your body through space in multiple directions. If you're really good at lifting heavy weights, then you're getting really good at the skill at lifting heavy objects. So there is a definite skill difference. And which is why if you're an athlete, or you're interested in performance, you want to do some of both. You want to be able to lift heavy objects and move heavy objects, but you also want to be able to move your body
exactly
through space really well. And so because they're both resistance training, you're developing different skills for both that are going to complement each other. In terms of, you know, getting lean, he says stay lean. That's a lot of that's diet. I mean, you could get fat and do bodyweight exercises just like you could with weights.
Of course.
As far as building muscle, no. Weights are going to destroy bodyweight exercises.
Yeah.
But I think if you combine the two, you'll get a nice combination. You just got to know how to do that right.
Well, you know what?
You'll maintain range of motion and function that way too. It'd be beneficial.
Even though I kind of opposed Justin at first when he said this, here's actually something that kind of strengthens his argument too, now that I'm thinking about it, is, you know, doing only bodyweight exercises, you probably limit yourself or minimize muscle imbalances and and actually hurting yourself from lifting. If you're just dealing with your own body, there's probably less chance of you getting hurt than if I was stacking weight on myself and doing things and moving like that. Wouldn't you say that?
I think
it
depends.
Do you think it'd be equally, or do you think, because I would think that.
Okay, it depends, man, because I'm thinking of all the body weight exercises that you do, like the hard ones.
Well,
I
think your analogy was right on with the skill. Like it definitely is a different skill. And the thing is, you can master like the way that your body moves, I think, by doing body weight training. Like you see these guys doing these crazy calisthenics, and you know, they've mastered their ability to get into this real strange movement, and on command they can get their body to do really crazy things. And that takes a very specific skill, trained by, you know, moving in that very specific pattern and, you know, commanding your muscles to react to doing that, as opposed to, you know, just overcoming load.
Yeah.
You know, overcoming load, that's a different skill, but will also complement that other skill.
Right.
I guess it really depends on the things that really, you know, tickle your tummy, whichever thing you'd rather do more. Like, If
there's some great body weight muscle builders, you do pull ups, right?
Yeah, if you think like muscle ups or like handstand push ups I'd rather be able to say I deadlift, you know, 600 pounds than to say I can do 15 muscle ups,
right?
You know, yeah. And both are going to take a certain amount of discipline towards that goal,
right? Because that is fucking hard.
Yeah,
yeah,
right,
real hard.
Right, right,
both,
right.
Both, yeah. 15 muscle ups and deadlifting 600 pounds are equally very hard in their individual selves. But I guess if you think it's cooler to do 15 muscle ups and you want to be able to do that, then I think that's each.
Here's another example. You just talked about handstand push ups, right? Where you're standing on your hands, yeah, upside down.
I did that kind of stuff. That's okay, what I did.
So that's working your shoulders just like a standing shoulder press, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot different skill between the two exercises. Doing the same movement, but there's different stability involved, different balance that's involved. And so what you get out of body weight training is just different skills for how you move your body. Really, that's what it boils down to, because I could make body weight training extremely heavy and challenging. I won't be able to mimic a deadlift with body weight. I don't know how you would do that. I mean, some exercises you just can't copy one way or the other.
Yeah. That's why it's extremely impressive to me whenever I see this. Whenever I see isometrics, like a super big buff dude who's actually limber and functional and can do bodyweight pull-ups and do a lot of these bodyweight exercises in addition to going over and ripping 600 pounds off the floor.
I know, when that's super impressive.
Yeah, when you see guys like that, I think that's because you know that they've had to incorporate both. Because you can't just, you're one of them focusing on just one or the other is going to develop a great skill set. Very few people can walk around on their hands and do, you know, handstand push-ups for 10 or 15 and then turn right around and bench press, you know, 405.
Right, and it's like those motor, you know, movement patterns that, like, I want to keep established in the way that I move. And, like, that's why I want to make sure that I'm addressing that even when I'm lifting super heavy. And, you know, I'm trying to adapt to lifting heavy weights and load again. Like, but I still want to have these unique movements, and I can do that on command still. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like that's an important thing to think about. Like when you are just weight training, like, you know, do I still want to respond and do I want to play basketball on the weekends or something like that? Yeah. Right. Do I want to be able to do that? Well, you better make sure you maintain that.
Mm-hmm. The Sean P22, who is currently the most influential person in the fitness community.
Mm. Besides us?
Besides you guys.
I wish we were. We should be.
We're not arrogant.
Community.
No, we're not arrogant.
No, unfortunately we're not. Unfortunately it's people that are like Mr. Olympia. I mean, you know, with
well, in your world, definitely.
You think that?
Well, I mean,
I guess in your fitness sphere. Up, no, it's in his fitness sphere.
Mine is like
Joey Swole. I mean, the guy's got fucking 2 million people following him. I mean,
you're right.
And you can't deny that
he's got a big.
He's influencing 2 million people some way or another. Like, how many people can you name that are influencing?
Dude, what about somebody like a Jillian Michaels?
Oh, geez.
Right?
I mean, she's in front of like every household.
Okay, you have me beat there. Jillian Michaels definitely trumps Joey Swole as far as how much they're influencing. But how about this? Let's talk about them too. Let's talk about the two of them. Because the question
really
is
different.
Yeah, who's currently the most influential person in the fitness community? And then I believe the rest of that question was, what are our thoughts on, you know, how their whole philosophy?
So when I look at, when I think of the word, because I thought about this when we were going to ask this question, and I said, what does influential mean to me? Influential means somebody who comes out and changes the conversation in fitness, or starts something that wasn't there before they came out.
That's okay? Your definition of influence?
Yeah, like you come
that's
out.
That's not my definition of influence.
Yeah, because you're coming out, like I'll give you an example. Like
that definition, that's like somebody to me, that sounds like a leader to me or somebody.
They're influential.
If you're a leader, you are influential too.
Somebody you would respond to.
You can
like
influence.
Like us would.
Yeah, you can. You don't have to come out and say something smart and new and influence a shitload of people doing it. Because what our
it doesn't have to
our
be.
Our examples of who we just said.
This is just like, if you're thinking, if you're going to ask some random person on the street right now, pull them in here and be like, who have you heard of in fitness?
Go. Yes, right.
Well, let me give Michaels. You guys my example, okay? Was anybody putting coconut oil and butter in their coffee before Dave Asprey was talking about it?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Right, yeah. Now that, by the way, putting butter in your coffee goes back a long time. Freaking Buddhist monks in certain countries do that. It's actually quite popular in certain countries. Hmm. But he brought it to America, started doing it, and now everybody knows what bulletproof coffee is.
Yeah.
He also made eating a very high-fat, low-carbohydrate diet. He kind of brought that back a little bit. Although that wasn't his. That's been around for a long time. It's been in and out. When we were kids, it was Atkins that did it.
And then a revised version of that in the South Beach.
They've used it a lot, too, in the medical community.
That's where it started.
For treatment.
Yeah. And, you know, Dave Asprey, very, very smart guy. I love a lot of the stuff he says when it comes to nutrition. His exercise information is fucking wrong. It's just
is
wrong.
It all like cardio based.
he talks about he doesn't like to lift too heavy. Because
look at
then
him.
I build too much muscle. I don't want to build too much.
Doesn't look like anybody.
Oh my god! Shut up.
I don't know anybody that wanted to look like him.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
That's an example of only what means a fit or healthy person. But he's not a very, you know.
No, he talks a lot about, and he's very honest. This one thing I like about the guy. He's very honest. Talks about how he experiments with his body.
Was he the one that got caught with the photoshopping his picture with like the six pack on?
I don't know.
You didn't know that,
dude.
No, I didn't know that.
Doug, please back me up on that one.
Doug, Google Dave Asprey photoshopped abs.
Well, actually, I think it was Lane Norton that called him out on that.
Yeah,
no
Lane,
way.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, Lane called him out.
Yeah, I think Lane.
There's another influential. Mr. IIFYM. If you're going to go that direction of people that have changed the way people are thinking and doing things, I mean, before Lane, I don't know anybody that was talking about IIFYM. I know, and it's almost like it's not something like you said that is. New. It's not like new science. If it fits your macros, it's basically how bodybuilders have been eating forever. They calculate their macronutrients and they stick to it to get to a diet. So that the only difference is why, and this is why I don't like IFYM, is because they took something old, like a bodybuilder's diet, and they made it mass appeal. How do they make mass appeal? You can have donuts.
Yeah.
You can have cookies. Mm-hmm. You can have ice cream. It just has to fit inside your macros. That's the fucking problem with it. It's not new science. It's nothing groundbreaking. It's how bodybuilders have been eating forever. Only we figured like, oh, this is a great way. And let me tell you, this is even Lane's pitch on it, on how he, somebody asked this. So here you go. Whoever asked for this, here you go. Because I said on the forum that we could role play this out very easily because I know Lane's stance on it. His stance is the psychological benefits behind it.
Right.
Because you're not demonizing these crazy foods. Right. You're not like, you know, freaking going
obsessed about this or that. Yeah.
You're not being obsessed by it. And it's and so he does preach to balance and still eating a majority of your food as clean foods. And he just, if it fits your macros principle, it means you get to allow to do it. The problem though is once you do something like that, I feel like people are extreme, man. They go one way or the other. And people take something that is a decent philosophy. I think it's a really decent philosophy. The problem with the philosophy is that, you know, a majority of the people do it all wrong. It's the reason why people don't see phenomenal results from it, because a lot of them end up eating like shit most of the time.
Yeah. So, I mean, when it comes to influential, that's the first person I thought of was you know, I thought of Lane Norton and then I thought of Dave Asprey. But do you know what else I think about? Mark Masteroff in fitness. Mark Masteroff, who is a founder of 24 Hour Fitness, changed the game at how gyms operate and sell memberships and build.
He changed the game more than once.
Well, he changed it with 24 Hour Fitness and then he sold, and now he owns Fitness Holdings Worldwide, I think is the name of it, that owns UFC gyms.
Yoga Works.
Crunch Yoga Works. So he just kind of tends to be a trendsetter. Yeah. And I think he's extremely influential, but a lot of people don't know who he is because he's kind of behind the scenes.
Well, and that's just that in itself. The fact that you were the owner, creator of 24 Hour Fitness, and now he's owner creator of UFC gyms, which, you know, we're those that are listening that have never seen one yet. They're fucking awesome. Go inside one.
Best big box gym I've ever been in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you could have asked any of the three of us for sure. Before they even the first one opened, we could have told you where I was going to go. You take Mark Mastroff, the OG of the gym industry, and you pair him with Dana White, the fastest growing sport in the world right now. And what do you get? You get UFC gyms, and it's pretty obvious the direction it's going in. They're already a force, but they'll be a dominant force in the future for sure. And one of the things you can count on for someone like him, he's always on the front end of it. But
that's someone you want to keep an eye out for that being, if you're looking for that the being, direction of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that being said, that's talking on a business influential, and I wouldn't necessarily say Mark Mastroff is Mr. Program Design himself or he has anything to do with that. And same thing with Asprey, same thing with Lane Norton. As far as program design, as far as building something like that, I would say out of all the people we've named, Jillian Michaels, Lane Norton, all the
By far he'll well, kill
let's,
them. Yeah.
Okay, I would say that out of all the people we just named, Dave Asprey, Lane Norton, all the Jillian stupid Michaels, bodybuilders, yeah. Joey Swells, Jillian Michaels, I think the only one I can tell you that I have a lot of respect for his entire philosophy is probably Lane Norton.
Yeah, well, he's a trainer. He's actually a real. You know, coach and trainer. Although Jillian Michaels is also a trainer, she's very much on the celebrity aspect of it, the TV show type of stuff. Yeah.
So she's a personality workout. She's the America's hardcore trainer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of thing.
Let's just put it, we would rip her to shreds if she was on here, let's be honest.
Yeah, whatever.
Watkins R23 is asking about your thoughts on ketogenic diets for fat loss.
Again,
so ketogenic diet again. So to clarify, ketogenic diet is eating a diet that's high in fat, moderate in protein, very, very low in carbohydrates. The body's systems of energy production switch over from taking carbohydrates and using them as energy to taking fat and using them as energy. Some people, a lot of people, do extremely well on a diet like this. Not all people, though, but a lot of people do.
Not me.
Do very, very well. Couple of reasons. Number one, ketones, which are produced when your body burns fat, are appetite suppressive. So that part helps. Some people have, who do it, their energy seems to be more consistent throughout the day. They don't get the ups and downs like they would with carbohydrates. Those two reasons right there, I would say, are probably a couple of reasons why it seems to be very successful for certain people. I know for me, when I eat ketogenic or around a ketogenic diet, because sometimes I increase my carbs, but I never go too high with them, I feel way better. I do not do well. Like, high carbs for me would be a low carb day for Adam. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm eating high carbs, it's 250 in a day. And that's your dieting.
That's low carb.
Yeah, that's you dieting. Mm-hmm. You know, so for some people, it works really, really well. And
I'm glad you positioned that way, because I had a feeling you were going to come out a little different on this, because I know you have been doing it a lot and you've been ranting and raving about how you feel and a lot of things. And I agree with what he's saying right now. I think that there's all kinds of science that supports the benefits behind it. I think it's great, and I think if you have the discipline to do that and you feel great when you do it, then maybe it is something you most certainly should consider, and I think it could be excellent for fat loss. Now, the flip to that, and just like he said, somebody like me, when I'm cutting, it's 300 grams of carbs. So
right, I never would eat that much.
Yeah, anymore. I lose body weight at 300 grams of carbs. My maintenance is more like 350 to 400. Surplus is above that. So for me, I've done this, but I've manipulated, I've gone no carb, I've done 50 grams, 100, I've done all kinds of playing around with. I don't feel good. Now I also know this about the ketogenic diet too. It takes 14 days before your body switches.
For some people it takes that long, yeah.
So I've never really truly given myself 14 days or more of being ketogenic to see if my body switches over and then I don't ever miss a carb again. But I there's a lot of carbohydrates that I really enjoy. And if you're going to do ketogenic and you're going to stick to it and you're going to be true to it and get the true benefits of it, you got to stick to it and you got to really do it.
Fully balls deep.
Yeah.
In it.
Otherwise, and the experience that I have with people that try it, it ends up backfiring on them, because what they do is they take all the carbs away and they go for a few days or maybe even a week or two at a time. And then because they've missed it so bad, they over binge on the other side. And now their body has gotten used to not consuming carbs and has started to get efficient without that. And now they're flooding it with not even what they were eating before, but more than that. You just get this huge weight gain from it. So if you're somebody who doesn't think they're going to miss carbohydrates, then I mean, by all means, but dude, I would, here's my theory. I would rather build a metabolism and teach my body how to utilize carbohydrates so that I can go do that every once in a while and not pay the price. If you live in a ketogenic lifestyle and then you decide I'm going to the movies with my friends and I'm going to have popcorn and candy and soda and just enjoy myself for a day, that's going to affect your body a hell of a lot different than it would affect mine. Because I could walk in there and do that and it won't.
I'll get hyper. I notice a big sugar rush if I have some. But I'll tell you what, statistically speaking, when they do studies on this and they do large group studies, and they'll say, you in this group, all you guys, we want you to, just cut your calories. And you on this group, we don't want you to cut your calories. We just want you to not eat carbs. When they follow these people for 6 months and a year, the no carb group loses more weight and keeps it off more effectively. This is like over and over when they do studies. So it seems for a lot of people it's more effective. But I will say this, the human body is extremely adaptive with different types of eating. There's cultures that eat, you know, a lot of carbohydrates and are very healthy and live a long time. And then there's cultures that eat almost no carbohydrates and they're very healthy as well. The body is extremely effective at adapting to different types of foods and the way we eat. And humans have been on Earth for a long time and we've almost gone extinct several times. So it's probably, you know, why we can do so. But so I would say try it out for yourself. I think if you're a very overweight person, people who tend to be really, really big tend to be very insulin sensitive.
Yeah.
And in that case, cutting carbohydrates down very low tends to be very effective, I've seen. Mm. Especially people who are really obese or been obese their whole lives.
I think that's a really good point. That's a definite person who even myself would end up doing is restricting that because of that. Although I think I'm pretty sure I know who Watkins is and I've seen his IG. He's pretty fit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a pretty ripped dude. I think he's looking for the next level of getting shredded or what like that. And the ketogenic thing, and I feel like it's so hot right now. I feel like this is like the fourth time.
It's grown like legs since last time I checked.
Right. I feel that. And it's nothing really new. Some new science is emerging. But even the study like Sal talked about, I mean, you mentioned the study about
I tried bringing this up and my wife Courtney always like scoffs at me. He's like, ugh. You know, ketogenic, because she's coming from the medical version
right,
of that.
Right.
And so, like, you know, obviously the version of fitness is a lot different. And they do have, like, some inclusions of carbohydrates in there. Am I right, Sal?
Well,
as far as the, I mean, like,
there's different
minor amounts of it, but I mean, they're excessively, like, super extreme
in
the medical community.
Yeah. In the medical community, when you're doing it for medical purpose, like epilepsy, it's not just a lot of fat. It's mostly what you eat. So it's like, it'll be like 75% of your calories come from fat or 80% from fat and very little from protein and none from carbs. Yeah. That's the real ketogenic diet. But then athletes, when they do ketogenic diets, will have a little bit more protein and give themselves more vegetables that'll come up as some carbs. And then you have things like the cyclic ketogenic diet where you only have carbs around your workouts. And there's a lot of different ways that people try to apply this. For me personally, I can eat ketogenic in the sense that I eat a lot of fat, I eat a moderate amount of protein, and I don't eat any carbohydrates except for maybe vegetables. And if I don't watch what I eat, if I just do that and I eat and I try to eat a lot, and when I'm hungry I snack and whatever, but I stay within those guidelines, I stay lean.
Yeah. Well, I stay lean.
I don't have to worry about it.
I know that too. But I mean, that's a lot of that has to do with your fat satiating and when you're eating protein.
Totally.
I mean, you're eating some dense full foods. And carbs, you could take a handful of some carbs and that could be 300-400 calories.
Yeah, and make me hungrier.
Yeah, yeah.
And make me really hungry.
Make you want to keep diving into it, like the whole, you can't just eat one chip type of deal. You know what I'm saying? You just keep eating and eating
and eating. Dude, I had over the weekend, I had some sugar-free gum, which I usually don't eat just because of the artificial sweetener, but I had some. It tastes, to me, it tastes so sweet because I don't ever have sugar. Yeah. It's like, and I know my body's gotten to that point where it's gonna be heightened, yeah. and it's you know, my senses.
You have an orgasm from a strawberry,
dude. Oh, or a strawberry right now would literally eat like it would taste like a gummy bear would.
Well, the people that have been listening to this back when I did my show prep and we interviewed me through that whole process. I mean, I told you guys that's one of my favorite parts about depleting and cutting and coming down is I get rid of so much of that crap in my diet that, you know, you literally do bite into a strawberry or an apple and it literally tastes like candy. I mean, it is that rich and that full. And that's why I always tell people too, when they scoff or make fun of people that eat really clean and do stuff like that, I'm like, you know what's crazy? And this also goes back to this IFY or IIFYM bullshit. Is that, you know, it's amazing when you actually do eat really, really clean for a long period of time, how much your system gets cleaned out. And then all of a sudden, whole natural foods start to taste different. They become much richer. And
you actually you stop craving like crap food.
Oh, yeah. And the fats and your natural sugars, like found in fruit and vegetables, all of a sudden become very satisfying. Yeah. Where before,
they're not overwhelmed anymore and overpowered with all these condensed, you know, flavors that are just hitting you like rockets.
And, it makes such perfect sense when you talk about the science of it, because that's all sugars and candies and all this artificial stuff is. It's condensed and it's
overload on your brain. Listen, your brain has receptors that pick up signals that tell you what something should taste like. It only makes sense that if you overload the shit out of them with stuff that you would not find in nature, because our brains evolved in a completely different environment, that they will downregulate certain receptors, because it's like, whoa, what is all this?
Yeah.
I'm going to downregulate some of my receptors so that it doesn't, so that's so overwhelming. And then you adapt to that flavor, and then that tastes normal to you. Whereas if you don't have it and you have a little bit, it's like, boom, you know, like you said, explosion of taste. Here's the thing. You could put a bowl of potato chips in front of me, which I love potato chips, okay? And I wouldn't want to touch any of them. But if I have one of them, I'm fucked.
Yeah, yeah.
You
exactly.
Got to keep that in mind also. This is also one of the things with, you know,
it's me and pepperoni.
When you're making those choices and you're saying, I'm going to purposely schedule in this cheat day or cheat meal, you're going to fucking
you're
be hungry. And
that.
You're going to be hungry and you're going to crave shit for like the next 2 or 3 days, sometimes a week. That's what happens to me. I know that. And it happens to my clients. Well, they'll have a cheat day and then it's like hard to get back on track. Now, if there's a reason for eating what you're eating, like it's your kid's birthday or it's a celebration,
totally,
or, you know, it's worth it. But if it's like, ooh, I'm going to schedule the cheat day on Friday, it's like, well,
yeah,
isn't it
so much better to just let it happen? Like naturally, like you're not like planning that. You're just like, you show up, it's there. Okay, this is happening, you know, but it's not like you're obsessing about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause then when you plan for it,
so
I feel like
you're just concentrating on that.
I'm glad you brought that up right now, because you just reminded me. I'm training one of my private clients today, and she has a little TV always running on in the garage when we're working out, and Oprah Winfrey's on. And Oprah just had a guest. This is recent, last 2 weeks. So those that have watched this probably remember this show. And I forget the name of the diet, but they had this lady come on, and it was, you know, she was launching it for the beginning of January. So this is the big program. And she was talking about how the whole basis on this is scheduling, you know, your cheat meals throughout the whole month. Like, okay, I'm going to cheat on this Thursday. I'm going to cheat on that the following Sunday. I need at least one Sunday. You know what I'm saying? And I'm so like, I think it's the same thing that I used to get when people would hire me for competing and getting ready for a show. And they'd be like, well, when do I get a cheat day, or what's my cheat days? And I'm like, I don't understand this philosophy. My goal is for us to never cheat, but it's going to happen. We know that. We know there's going to be a challenge. But why don't we wait until it becomes a situation where you feel like, man, Adam, it is my kid's birthday. I don't want to be eating on a Tupperware. I don't want to be eating all this boring ass food. I want to enjoy. I want to have a slice of cake with him and have a barbecue and do all these things and be normal. I'm like, great. This is a perfect opportunity for us to eat off of our meal plan. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and enjoy yourself for a day. You know, be mindful. You know, if you're consuming those things,
yeah,
keep
your portions, you know,
yeah,
under control,
exactly.
Like something else.
Yeah. Or be active, you know, move around, be active,
right.
Be mindful.
A lot more water, you know, to kind
of
count.
Yes. Yeah. But let's not plan out when you're going to come off, because otherwise you do exactly what Sal was saying. And you'll notice every time you introduce that, you kick that craving right back up. You kick that right back up.
That's right. You're trying to turn that mechanism back on.
It makes it a switch. It makes it more difficult. And here's the other thing too. And I guarantee if you're a trainer listening, you've heard this from your clients, they'll eat really well for a long time. They'll do really good. And then they'll go and have pizza. And then they'll be like, oh my God, I ate pizza last night. And you're like, oh, was it good? And they'll be like, yeah, but I got really sick. I felt horrible or whatever. I used to be able to eat that food, but now I can't anymore. The reality is they always felt shitty before. They just have a contrast now. They felt so good that when they ate that food, they realized how bad it made them feel. This is also one of the benefits of eating clean.
Don't they call it habituation?
I maybe. I mean, but it's one of the benefits of it. Like, I eat... if I eat something, you know, quote unquote bad now, I feel shitty. And so, you know what part of my motivation for not eating it is?
Yeah, to not feel shitty.
Yeah, like if we're going to a birthday party and everybody's having fun and I'm looking at the cake and I'm thinking, you know, I want to enjoy myself. And I'm like, you know, I'm not going to have a good workout the next day. I'm going to feel crappy. It's going to make me hungrier for the next couple, three, you know, 2 or 3 days. I'd rather not. It's not because I'm thinking I'm going to get fat. I'm thinking to myself, I don't want to feel crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a much healthier association with or connection to food and eating properly.
It goes back to, you know, the analogy of performance. Like, you know, what does this do for me? You know, not like, oh my God, so good tasting. Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. So
moral of the story.
Moral of the story.
Balance.
Subscribe to Mind Pump. Leave a 5-star rating and review.
Thank you.
Gangsters.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.